Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio, live from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Wednesday, May 17, 2023. The United Nations is appealing for billions of dollars to help people affected by the fighting in Sudan.
Today, 25 million people, more than half the population of Sudan, need humanitarian aid and protection. This is the highest number we have ever seen in the country.
And detained government officials have been released in South Sudan's Jonglei State.
And the government officials, they are already back home in Jonglei State, and they are all in good health.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. As fighting continues in Sudan, the United Nations Humanitarian Response Plan is seeking $2.56 billion to help people affected by the crisis, and the UN Refugee Agency is seeking more funding to assist those who were forced to flee. Ramesh Rajasingham, head of the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in Geneva and director of the Coordination Division today, said the team is seeking $2.56 billion.
The conflict that erupted on 15th of April last month in Sudan has killed hundreds of people, injured more than 5,000 people, and millions more have been confined to their homes, unable to access basic services and essential health care. And nearly a million people have been displaced, many across to neighboring countries. Today, 25 million people, more than half the population of Sudan, need humanitarian aid and protection. This is the highest number we have ever seen in the country. The response plan we are launching today reflects that new reality.
The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees said the agency is seeking $472 million to assist more than 1 million people over the next 6 months. On April 15, Sudan's army, led by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and the paramilitary rapid support forces commanded by Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, broke into open conflict. The two leaders, who had been leaders of the country's military government, disagreed over talks to create a transitional government led by a civilian administration. A visiting representative of Sudanese paramilitary support forces, Commander General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, says his group remains committed to the ceasefire and welcomes any move by President Salva Kiir to try to resolve the conflict in Sudan. Yusuf Issa met with President Kiir together with IGAD officials in Juba earlier today. South Sudan's acting foreign affairs minister says the president will continue to engage the two warring parties in Sudan to peacefully resolve their conflict. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Speaking to reporters shortly after a closed-door meeting with President Kiir, Mr. Yusuf Issa said the rapid support forces welcome any move by the South Sudan leader to help end the conflict in Sudan.
Salva Kiir was the first president to suggest for a dialogue between the military and the rapid support force in Juba, and we welcome the call from our side because we trust he knows more about Sudan and we are ready to take part in any step taken by him to reach a lasting peace in Sudan.
Waknegebeye is the IGAD executive secretary who accompanied Dagalo's representative to Juba. He says efforts aimed at negotiating a ceasefire are slowly yielding tangible results as regional leaders continue to persuade the two warring parties there to lay down their arms.
And I came with a message how to boost and how to continue our effort to help our brothers and sisters in the Republic of Sudan. As you know, there was a lot of initiatives, but we have not yet succeeded to stop, to silence the gun, and the people of Sudan is suffering. Our brothers and sisters who are hosting millions of people from other countries are now suffering for themselves.
South Sudan's acting foreign affairs minister, Deng Dao Deng, says Kiir is committed to engaging the two warring parties for a possible end of violence.
His Excellency met the representative of Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo.
The move comes as the two warring factions seek a possible solution to the conflict in Khartoum that has killed nearly 1,000 and displaced more than 1 million citizens. More than 1 million citizens. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
On the 40th anniversary of the formation of the Sudan People's Liberation Army, or SPLA, yesterday, some widows of fighters killed during the war are calling on the South Sudan government to pay their late husband's pension. One widow says the time is long overdue for the government to pay for the pensions of the families of the dead. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Bor.
Widows of the SPLA soldiers who were killed during the war say they have been forgotten and they need the government to pay for the service their husbands gave the country. Awuri Chola Adul says her husband died for the sake of the country, so the government should compensate.
Please, remember those who died during the war. You continue to pay those who were killed after independence. But you have since forgotten those who were killed during the war of independence. Without pension and no salary, on behalf of the widows, I would like to ask for the payment of husband's pensions from this month.
On May 16, 1983, soldiers with the 105 Battalion of the Sudan Armed Forces mutinied in Malwale Chad military garrison in Bor over what they called the marginalization of the people of southern Sudan by the administration in Khartoum. The mutiny gave birth to the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, which eventually signed peace with Khartoum in 2005 and led to South Sudan's independence in 2011. Chol says, although there is much to demand from the government, she's happy her husband's death was not in vain, especially with the country's independence. Speaking at the event Tuesday marking the anniversary, Dine Jokshagur, the governor of Jonglei State, says the war of independence will mean nothing unless the South Sudanese people unite and stop fighting along ethnic lines.
The building nation is not all about what you want and what you agree to. It's all about compromise and love for one another. It's all about making sure that you can disagree and also agree. Because if we start fighting each other as we have done, what have we achieved from it? All the people that have died after the liberation struggle, after we achieve our independence, what can we say that they died for?
Kwal Manyang Duke, a senior presidential advisor, calls on the Sudanese people to stick to the same unity portrayed during the War of Independence to achieve progress.
Unity is important.
Unity is important, and peace that the people of the church usually talk about is important. All the Ten Commandments all talk about peace. Why do we go to church and come out and kill people? We must correct ourselves to correct South Sudan. We must keep peace and stop tribalism. All people who died here would have died in vain if we don't keep peace.
He says the conflicts that broke out in 2013 and 2016 caused South Sudan greatly and took the country backward. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Bor.
Still in Bor, Jonglei officials say a group of state government officials that was being detained by some disgruntled youth in Duk County have been released. The state's minister for roads and bridges, who led the delegation to Gadiang area, says he and his team were set free after the state government, along with the office of the president, paid about 100 million South Sudanese pounds, roughly the equivalent of $120,000 to the armed and disgruntled youth, as incentives for 3 months. Dengai Deng has the details for VOA from Bor.
Jonglei State's Information Minister Elizabeth Nyadak says the 14 members of the government delegation who were detained after visiting Gadiang area in Duk County to assess a road construction project have been released. Nyadak says they were freed after being kept hostage for about 10 days by armed local youth.
The youth got paid in both parties. The youth went back home, and the government officials, they are already back home in Jonglei State, and they are all in good health.
Last week, John Samuel Manyon, a Jonglei State Cabinet Minister, said local youth were mobilized from Duke, Huror, Hayot, Nyirol, and Akobo counties and stationed in Duke County to voluntarily provide security along the highway and around Gadiang area. The youth leaders say the state government signed a contract with them a few months ago and agreed to pay each 180,000 South Sudanese pounds per month, but the government violated the deal, which forced them to detain the officials. The Minister of Roads and Villages for Jonglei State, James Mawich Makwach, says he and his team were set free after the state government, in collaboration with the presidency, paid about 108 million South Sudanese pounds, roughly the equivalent of $120,000 to the armed men, as incentives for 3 months.
The youth, we went and met with them, and there was a big concern from them that they are demanding a 3 month salary payment from the state and ARC. But we told them that there is no any agreement reached so far about the payment. But because of the situation, the state government, in coordination with the presidency, managed to secure some pan for those youths. And then we paid them, and that's why we are now in the state headquarters.
By ARC, Mawich is referring to the Africa Resource Corporation, the company that is constructing the road. He says government officials were welcomed by the youth, who later turned violence, demanding cash for providing protection to workers and machinery belonging to the construction company. Minister Mawich says he and his team went through some unexpected circumstances while dealing with them, and he is glad to be back to his duty station safely.
My message to our people in Jonglei State and people of South Sudan in general is that road is the backbone of development. When there is no road, there is no services. Our people, especially youth, should volunteer themselves to protect the road, because the road is their own. They have to own it by themselves.
BL Jek, the leader of Nyirol County Youth Association, says his subordinates set the government official free after their demand were met according to the contract.
Those youths have right, because they have signed it that the MOU with a company and a state, because they are working as a protection team of that location. They have get the right now, and gonna be tomorrow if there's something need to be done by youth, so they will participate fully. So they have claimed the right, and they get it fully without any condition.
Noble Le Goy, the chairperson of Duke County Youth Association, insists that youth from his area had a separate contract with the construction company ARC and were therefore not part of the group that detained the state officials.
There were some other youth selected to safeguard the main highway, the face of Kadiang to Ayot. So these youth, they entered into an agreement with ARC, and they agreed on how much they were supposed to be paid. So when the time elapsed, they were cleared by ARC. The youth who were working on the other faces of the road also demanded the same payment.
The freed government officials include ministers and members of the state parliament. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, Amnesty International reports an uptick in executions in the Middle East and parts of Africa. Stay tuned for that report right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you reward yourself?
I'll go and buy myself maybe a pair of shoes I always desire to get. I'll go and have a meal I always desire to get. Or anything. Depends on what I've achieved.
By spoiling myself. I'm a girl. I go buy myself clothes, shoes, do my hair, my nails. Basic things that will make me look good and happy at the end of the day.
I cook a good meal. I sit down with a chill drink.
My work involves very hard work, so I get very tired. So I reward myself once every month. I do that by swimming and relaxing at the beach with my family.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. The office of South African President Cyril Ramaphosa says preparations are being made for a delegation of six African heads of state to visit Eastern Europe to discuss a plan to end the war in Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky have agreed to separate meetings in Moscow and Kiev with the African leaders. Ramaphosa did not give a time frame or outline any parameters for the potential peace talks. Darren Taylor reports.
Ramaphosa said he'd be joined by the leaders of Egypt, Republic of Congo, Senegal, Uganda, and Zambia for what he called a peace mission to Eastern Europe.
The US and the Europeans are going to view this proposal with some skepticism.
Dr. Richard Gowan is the International Crisis Group's representative at the United Nations. He points out that four of the six African countries, Congo, Senegal, South Africa, and Uganda, abstained from a United Nations vote last year condemning Russia's invasion. Zambia and Egypt voted in favor of the motion, but both have strong ties with Moscow. Gowan says the Ukrainians would be concerned that South Africa's leading the peace push. The African National Congress government has said it's neutral in the conflict, but it has also been accused of selling weapons and ammunition to Russia, which it denies, and South Africa's top army general met with his Russian counterpart in Moscow on Monday.
The first task for the African mediation group will be to convince Kiev and Kiev's allies that this is a good faith initiative that could actually lead to a deal that would satisfy the Ukrainians.
Zelensky has said he would not consider a peace deal to end the war until Russian forces withdraw completely from Ukrainian territory. Professor Roland Henwood lectures politics at the University of Pretoria.
The question in a conflict such as this is that there's a moment for negotiations and for peace processes to start. And I'm not sure we've reached that moment. Both leaders in Ukraine and Russia seem to be convinced that they can win this militarily, and that normally does not augur well for negotiations.
He thinks something's happening behind the scenes to open the door for an African peace push.
The challenge here for Ukraine is how long can they sustain what is happening? The country is being destroyed, and they can get as much military aid as possible. They have a finite number of troops. They can only endure so much. Maybe Russia is in more difficulty than it seems. The sanctions definitely is having an effect. It may have a stronger effect than we think. Maybe the war is going worse than we think for Russia, and they may be more amenable.
Gowan says it's essential that any attempted peace process takes both Russia's and Ukraine's interests into account.
The Ukrainians are very concerned that there will be a push for a ceasefire, and that even if Russia did pause its hostilities, it would simply use that as an opportunity to firm up its control over the parts of Ukraine that it has seized.
In his statement, Ramaphosa said the US and Britain expressed cautious support for an African peace plan. but Henwood doubts they'd be involved too much, as they're Ukraine's major allies and Moscow views them as enemies. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Amnesty International says recorded executions in 2022 reached their highest level in 5 years. The organization recorded 883 executions across 20 countries, making a rise of 53%, and that does not include China, where figures are kept secret. Henry Ritual reports from London.
Amnesty says the rise in executions in 2022 was led by countries in the Middle East. In Iran, the number soared from 314 in 2021 to 576 in 2022. In Saudi Arabia, the number of executions tripled from 65 in 2021 to 196 in 2022, the highest recorded in 30 years. Many are for drug-related offences. Chiara San Giorgio is from Amnesty International.
In addition to this, we should flag the death penalty continued to be used in both countries as a tool of state repression. We saw, for example, towards the end of the year, Iran making a stir and using the death penalty to punish the protests, with executions and the sentences continuing well into 2023. In addition to that, one characteristic, sadly, of the use of the death penalty in Iran is the disproportionate impact of executions on ethnic minorities and religious minorities.
That's a characteristic also seen in Saudi Arabia. Again, Chiara San Giorgio.
And in fact, we had 81 executions in one day in 2022, and half of them were actually people belonging to the Shia minority in Saudi Arabia.
Amnesty says it is clear that China remains the world's most prolific executioner. Again, Chiara San Giorgio.
It remains a country that in secrecy carries out thousands of executions a year and imposes the same amount of death sentences. But it's really impossible to put a concrete number to that because of the secrecy. We have official confirmations coming from the authorities that executions for drug-related offences, for example, are carried out, that corruption is punished with the death penalty, but the numbers remain a state secret.
The use of the death penalty in North Korea and Vietnam is also shrouded in secrecy. Countries that have witnessed military coups have seen an uptick in executions. Egypt executed 24 people in 2022. Myanmar resumed the use of the death penalty for the first time since the 1980s, including democracy activist Kyaw Min Yew and former lawmaker Maung Kyaw. The United States saw a rise in the number of executions from 11 to 18. Again, Amnesty's Chiara San Giorgio.
We still have the second lowest number of the sentences in the history of the recent history of the death penalty in the U.S. because that tells us that the mood and the opinion of the death penalty among the jurors that sit on the penalty trial has changed.
While the Amnesty report covers 2022, executions in Iran continue to rise in 2023. At least 209 people have been put to death this year, according to the United Nations, which called for a halt to the practice. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Officials in Cameroon say 18 separatists have disarmed and surrendered to authorities in the biggest defection since the conflict broke out in 2017. Authorities say the English-speaking rebels, including two self-proclaimed generals, were hiding across the border in Nigeria. Leaders of the separatists, who want to break away from French-speaking majority Cameroon, have vowed to track down and kill the defectors. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Cameroon's military says 18 fighters, including David Dibo, alias General Baron, and Ekpe Jerome, alias General JB, surrendered and handed over their weapons in Mondemba Tuesday. Mondemba is a town in Cameroon's English-speaking southwest region that shares a border with Nigeria. Since 2017, separatists have been fighting to carve out an independent state called Ambazonia in Cameroon's English-speaking northwest and southwest regions. The self-proclaimed General Baron says he convinced the fighters to surrender. He says Cameroon military firepower was more than they could bear and that he saw several hundred fighters killed by government troops within the past 6 years.
We also beg our brother and we live in Sabushi.
He says he is pleading with scores of fighters who are still hiding in the bush to drop their weapons and be pardoned by the Cameroon government. He says fighters hiding on the border with Nigeria should hand their weapons to Cameroon police or government troops as he did, without which they will be killed by either hunger, disease, or in battles. Speaking with Cameroon's state broadcaster CRTV on Tuesday, Baron says the fighters handed their weapons to Cameroon military and government officials in Dian, an administrative unit where Mundeba is located. Gilbert Gubai Baldena is the highest Cameroon government official in Dian. He has assured the former fighters that the government will protect them.
General Baron and all of you, run away to Nigeria because it's difficult to continue. Tell the others who are still in the bush to come out. The head of state wants every Cameroonian take part in the reconstruction and development of country.
Baldena also warned that separatist fighters who refuse to surrender and drop their weapons will be killed by Cameroon government troops. Following their surrender, the government says the former fighters will be taken to the Center for Disarmament, Demobilization and Reintegration, or DDR in Boya, capital of Cameroon's English-speaking southwest region. The government says the defections are the largest number of fighters to surrender in a single day and the first time two dreaded generals dropped their weapons and surrendered to Cameroon's military. Separatists on social media, including Facebook and WhatsApp, say they will attack and kill all fighters who resign and join DDR centers created by Cameroon's central government in Yaoundé. The government says fighters who surrender will be pardoned, trained to create businesses, and reintegrated socially. Battles between Cameroon government troops and Western separatists escalated to armed conflict in 2017. Cameroon English-speaking separatists are fighting to carve out an independent English-speaking state from the French-majority nation. The International Crisis Group estimates the conflict has killed about 6,000 people and displaced more than 500,000. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with the song Sokote Mama by Tutu Band. That was A Taste of Sokote Mama by Tutu. I am your host, Nabil Biagio in Washington. On behalf of our engineer, Vesco Volarich, and our producer, Kwame Ofori, thank you for tuning in. And remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Mama,